It's time for Ruination Repeat, recapping last week's shows.
I'm not the only one who could use a little bit more of the big fatty.
Oh, dear Gussie, dear Gussie, dear sweet Gussie.
Welcome to this week's Ruination Repeat. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
So, I want you to just kind of paint a picture in your mind for a second.
Okay, I'm right.
Imagine you're waking up and it's like 5:00 a.m.
Ugh, already terrible.
Right. It's pitch black. You're stumbling through the dark, just trying to use the bathroom, still entirely half asleep.
Yeah, the classic early morning zombie walk.
Exactly. But suddenly you find yourself in this bizarre, like, unexpected battle of wills with a stubborn garage door.
Wait, a garage door? At 5 a.m.
Yeah, it just simply refuses to cooperate. And to cap it all off, you finally try to prep for your day, right? You're getting your life together.
Trying to, anyway.
Right. And you realize you accidentally printed your grocery shopping list on a giant, pristine 8x10 sheet of glossy photo paper.
Oh, no. That is like the absolute definition of a beautifully frustrating morning.
It really is.
But honestly, it's the perfect welcome to this kind of messy, hilarious collision of analog aging and, you know, digital chaos. Mm-hmm. Because we've all been there, right? Just standing in our kitchens, holding this high-definition, literal, frame-worthy printout of the words toilet paper and butter.
Yeah, you could hang it in the Louvre.
Exactly.
But that's exactly why we're here today, because we are exploring the audio archives from the week of July 27th through July 31st, 2026.
Right, taking a look at that specific week.
Yeah, within the wonderfully bizarre Big Fatty online universe.
This is such a fascinating ecosystem.
It really is. And our mission today is to look at how a highly structured, almost rigid daily routine actually acts as a vital shock absorber for all these relentless, completely unavoidable glitches of modern life.
Yeah, because if you've ever felt like you're fighting a losing battle against your own smart devices, you are definitely going to relate to this week's logs.
Oh, 100%.
But, you know, to really understand how the host of this universe defends his domain, what he affectionately calls his frugal fortress, we first have to look at the sheer volume of betrayals that kicked off this specific week.
Betrayals is definitely the right word for it.
Right, because it felt like both the digital and the physical worlds were just actively conspiring against him.
Oh, completely. Like, right out of the gate, there was chaos.
Total chaos.
It started with some pretty brutal publishing errors. So the host accidentally set his Friday audio log to publish at 12:30 p.m. instead of 12:30 a.m.
Oh, wow. Which, I mean, that might sound like a tiny typo to anyone else outside looking in.
Just a little AM-PM mix-up, right?
Right, but if you know the strict, like, 20-minute daily metronome of this particular community, you know that is massive disruption.
Oh, it throws everything off.
Yeah, because the audience depends on that exact timing to anchor their own routines.
They need it. And the moment he tried to manually fix it, you know, just to push it live, he got hit with a feed burner refresh glitch.
Of course he did. Because why would it be easy?
Exactly. The file just flat out refused to populate. So picture the frustration here. He's sitting there at his desk, hitting refresh over and over.
Just mashing the button.
Literally mashing it. And the computer screen is telling him the file is there, but the actual downloading devices out in the wild are just stubbornly stuck on Thursday's episode.
Ugh, that is infuriating. Is technology actively gaslighting its user?
Yes. It's saying everything's fine, but nothing is fine.
And it wasn't just the main show suffering this technological rebellion either.
Oh, right, the spinoff show.
Yeah, there was an absolute train wreck over on the Little Fatty Cast, or the LFC.
Oh my gosh, that recording.
So the host and his co-host attempted to use some brand new recording software, and it was a complete and utter disaster.
An unmitigated disaster.
They literally couldn't hear each other through the interface. Mm-hmm. So the entire recording is just the two of them shouting blindly into the void.
Like they're on opposite sides of a canyon.
Yes, just trying to guess when the other person has finally stopped speaking.
And the best part is that the community instantly caught on and validated the chaos.
They always do.
Yeah, a listener known as the Laughing Buddha actually took to the Blue Butterfly Network to confirm that, yes, the LFC was indeed a total train wreck.
Which is, you know, putting it mildly.
Very mildly. There are still some major kinks to work out with that software.
For sure. But honestly, all of those digital glitches, the publishing stuff, the software issues, they pale in comparison to the identity crisis that hit the community a few days later.
Oh, the audio detective work.
Yes. So a listener named Stinkpot points out that a recent good morning greeting that was played on the show sounded wrong.
Yeah, Stinkpot essentially becomes a private investigator here. He notes that the greeting was polite. It was cheerful.
Right.
Like, it was exuding genuine kindness.
Which, you know, immediately set off alarm bells for everyone listening.
Oh, massive red flags.
Because that greeting was supposedly submitted by the notoriously grumpy listener known as Sassy Max Sass.
Who is not known for his cheerful disposition.
Not at all. Mm-hmm. If you've tracked this universe, you know Sassy usually just grunts, calls the host fatso, and sounds incredibly put out by the very act of speaking into a microphone.
Right, like it's a huge burden for him to even exist on the audio.
Exactly. So the host actually has to go back and, you know, review the audio tapes. And he realizes Stinkpot was entirely correct.
He nailed it.
That was not Sassy. It was actually another prominent listener, Miss Bacon.
Ah, Miss Bacon.
Yeah, she was using the community's soundboards and mechanicals to perfectly impersonate Sassy.
It's essentially digital identity theft occurring within this highly insular small town.
That is exactly what it is. But what's fascinating to me isn't just that it happened, right? It's how the host handles it.
How so?
Well, he doesn't edit these mistakes out of the archives.
Oh, that's true. He leaves them in.
Think about that for a second. The publishing errors, the shouting match on the LFC, the fake Sassy greeting, he broadcasts all of it.
Uh-huh.
He puts the glitches right on center stage.
Wait, I have to ask, though. Do you think the community actually prefers these train wrecks over a polished, highly produced product?
I really do.
Because think about why you might buy a handmade ceramic mug, specifically because the handle is slightly crooked.
Oh, I love that comparison.
Right. You don't want the factory perfect one. That digital flaw, or the shouting on the podcast, is the exact thing that proves a real, vulnerable human actually made it.
That crooked handle analogy is spot on. I mean, if the archives were perfectly engineered and scrubbed of every mistake, it would feel sterile.
It would feel like AI.
Exactly. The crooked handle gives the listener something to hold on to and makes the host accessible. But, you know, that raises a bigger question.
Which is?
When technology and your own listeners are actively tricking you,
yeah.
How do you reestablish order in your daily life?
Oh, that's easy. You retreat to the bureaucracy.
Yes, you really do.
You lean heavily into the strict, immovable laws of your own making.
You lean into the SSQ desk?
The SSQ desk. For those unfamiliar, this is the community's official, highly pedantic follow-up question department.
That is an absolute institution.
It really is. And this week, Patty Bacon submits this burning inquiry about a hypothetical sitcom starring the host.
A hypothetical sitcom.
Yes, and she demands to know who officially auditioned for the sidekick role.
Right, she gives options too.
She does. Was it Doth Veda? Was it Lawrence Clyde? Or was it The Skull?
And we just have to pause here and appreciate that Lawrence Clyde is literally a sentient jalopy car from the community lore.
Like an actual rusty automobile.
Yes. An automobile is being seriously considered for a sitcom sidekick role.
It's wonderfully absurd.
It really is.
Yeah.
And Patty also wants to know who would play the wacky neighbor, explicitly comparing the desired energy to Gladys Kravitz from the classic television show Bewitched.
Gladys Kravitz, exactly.
And the thing is, the host doesn't laugh this off. He takes it entirely seriously.
He maps it all out.
He maps out these sprawling, bureaucratic, hypothetical realities for this sitcom. It's like a psychological tool, a way of asserting total control through imagination and structure when the real world is glitching out.
Right. But if we're talking about asserting control, we have to talk about the infamous 15-ring rule.
Oh boy, the 15 rings.
Because this is where the bureaucracy bleeds into real physical endurance.
It really does.
So a listener named Daniel B. Fosma submits a follow-up asking a very logical question. Why on earth does the host's mechanical answering machine take 15 rings to answer?
I mean, put yourself in that caller's shoes. In 2026, making someone wait 15 rings on a telephone is an eternity.
It's agonizing.
It is an absolute act of sheer auditory endurance. Most people hang up after 4 rings.
Right. And the host's defense of this is just brilliantly blunt.
What does he say?
He just flatly states on the recording that 15 rings is the default setting on his particular machine.
Oh, convenient.
Right. But more importantly, he claims his callers are special and therefore they simply require extra time to collect their thoughts before speaking.
Wow. It's a masterful piece of spin.
Oh, it really is.
He takes a massive technological annoyance and reframes it as a deeply generous accommodation for his audience.
I'm doing this for you.
Exactly. But this strict policing of the community, it extends beyond just the answering machine. It bleeds into the social calendar, too.
Oh, the birthdays.
Yeah, he meticulously monitors the community's exits from the birth canal, which, by the way, is their wonderfully clinical, almost medical term for birthdays.
Exits from the birth canal. It's so funny. And he rolls through these announcements with the absolute authority of a town crier.
Hear you.
Right. So he tracks Mike Hip, who is the proprietor of Soy Candles by Phoebes.
Okay.
He tracks Giggles, who holds the prestigious, though slightly tragic, title of former number two fan.
Former number two fan. That stings a little.
It does. But he is guarding the institutional memory of the community here.
He really is the keeper of the records. And he even polices the community's intellectual property rights.
Oh, the corporate trademark thing?
Yes. At one point, he notes that the corporate brand Dude Wipes is celebrating something they call Shirt Week.
Shirt Week.
And the host immediately flags this on the air as a blatant trademark violation of the community's own infamous, deeply biological lore.
Okay, hold on. I need to push back on this a bit.
Go for it.
Treating a 15-ring answering machine delay like it's a Supreme Court ruling, or strictly policing the trademark of bodily functions against a massive corporation. Isn't this just a guy building a sandcastle with a laser level and a protractor?
A laser level and a protractor. I like that.
Like, it's incredibly impressive to look at. The angles are perfect, but the tide of reality is still going to come in and wash it all away. Doesn't this just give him a false sense of control?
Okay, that's a really fair observation, but I would argue that the laser level and the protractor are the entire point of the exercise.
The act of doing it is the point.
Yes. The act of measuring the sand is the coping mechanism. You're absolutely right that the tide of aging, the broken garage doors, the technological chaos, it's all coming in. But while you have that laser level in your hand, while you are enforcing those 15 rings, you feel like you own the beach. It's about maintaining agency.
Okay, when you frame it like that, it actually makes total sense. The rules are essentially the comfort blanket.
Exactly.
But, you know, you can only organize your hypothetical sitcoms and your social calendar so much before the frugal fortress actually requires physical resupply.
You gotta eat.
Eventually, you have to step off the beach and go into the real world.
And that's where we see a fascinating shift. We move from these internal social audits to aggressive real-world financial audits.
Which brings us beautifully back to that amazing 8x10 glossy photo paper from the beginning of the week.
Oh yes, the glossy list.
So the host is prepping for his sacred Wednesday ritual, which is senior discount day at his preferred grocery sanctuary, Von's East.
Von's East.
Yeah, so he sits at his computer, curates his digital shopping list, hits print, and completely forgets that he left premium expensive photo paper in the printer tray.
So he actually marches into this progressive grocery store carrying a high-definition, glossy, frame-worthy portrait of his grocery needs.
Like an artwork of a shopping list.
Think about what a beautiful visual that is, you know, of analog intentions and digital workflows just completely crossing wires.
But once he's inside Von's East, regardless of the paper he's holding, he executes an absolute masterclass in the BOGO.
The buy one, get one free deal.
Yes. The haul he walks out with this week is spectacular.
Oh, the sensory details he provides the audience are so specific you can practically taste them.
Run through the list for me.
Okay, so he secures beer-battered onion rings, but he explicitly notes that they have a crispy crust rather than a crummy one.
Which is a vital distinction.
Absolutely vital. Then he gets butterball ground turkey.
Okay, practical.
A float chicken dip.
Very nice.
Powdered donuts. And these massive Tony Macaroni big candy bars.
Hey, Tony Macaroni?
Yeah, and he admits he's never even tried them before. He only bought them simply because the BOGO algorithm demanded it.
You cannot deny the BOGO, but we cannot forget the chocolate chip cannoli dip.
Oh, the cannoli dip.
This is the absolute highlight of the trip. So when he gets to the register, the checkout lady asks what he plans to dip into it.
A fair question.
Right, and he bluntly admits he has no dipping vehicle. He's just going to eat it straight with a spoon.
Just raw dogging the cannoli dip.
Exactly. And the checkout lady immediately validates him. She agrees that's the absolute best way to consume it.
It's this tiny, beautiful moment of human connection over pure, unadulterated indulgence.
It really is.
But, you know, the true victory of the Von's East trip is always the final arithmetic.
Give me the numbers.
He reports to his global audience that he spent exactly $40.12. And he saved a staggering $26.55.
That is an incredible profit margin for a grocery run.
It's basically making money.
Right. And his financial auditing doesn't just stop at the sliding glass doors of the grocery store. He's also meticulously managing his vehicular assets.
Oh, Earl Grey.
Yes. This week, he celebrates the 2-year anniversary of his Ford Maverick truck. which he affectionately named Earl Grey.
Earl Grey currently sits at a very respectable 12,700 miles.
Not bad for 2 years.
Not bad at all. And to celebrate this milestone, the truck naturally receives what it calls an Earl Grey wash.
Naturally. It deserves a spa day.
It does.
But before the wash, he engages in the ultimate community financial sport, which is the gas game.
The gas game.
So he hits up Sam's Club and fills up Earl Grey for exactly $3.52 a gallon.
And notice what he does next. He immediately benchmarks that hyper-local victory against the national data provided by his decentralized network of listeners.
Right.
He compares his 352 to Moose Bee's field report of 370 to a gallon, all the way up in Raleigh, North Carolina.
He is literally crowdsourcing economic data.
He is.
But let's look at the psychology of that for a second. Yeah. Is the obsession with couponing or saving that 26 bucks on cannoli dip or tracking gas prices down to the penny, is it really about the money itself?
I don't think so.
Right. To me, it feels like finding a glitch in a video game economy.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You know when you find an exploit in a game that gives you infinite gold, you don't actually need the virtual gold to win the game. You just want to prove to yourself that you can outsmart the system.
Like beating the code.
Exactly. Is he just trying to beat the macroeconomic game?
If we pull back and connect this to the bigger picture, you're entirely right. I mean, inflation and rising costs make people feel incredibly powerless.
It's overwhelming.
It really is. So by tracking the exact cents saved on Tony Macaroni bars and Sam's Club gas, he takes this terrifying, uncontrollable global economy and shrinks it down into a winnable, localized game.
He's playing on his own terms.
Yes. He's proving to himself and to his audience that he still has agency in a world that is constantly trying to overcharge him.
Okay, so the frugal fortress is secure. Earl Grey, the truck, is washed and fueled.
Check and check.
The pantry is heavily stocked with powdered donuts and cannoli dip.
Ready for anything.
But how does the host actually decompress? Because maintaining that level of rigid routine and financial vigilance has to be completely exhausting.
Oh, you escape the exact same way you maintain control.
Which is?
Do highly specific, meticulously scheduled chaos.
Ah, I love it.
Specifically through televised reality drama and some somewhat surreal physical excursions.
Yes. The reality TV escape hatch is fully open this week. We get a massive, deeply invested breakdown of the Sunday night head of household WrestleMania competition on Big Brother.
Which is such a fascinating contrast to his normal life.
Totally.
He describes this fake wrestling match featuring Jesse the Muscle Guy, who the host notes they just keep bringing back season after season, and Koo, the heavily tattooed MMA fighter.
And Koo actually ends up pulling off the win.
He does.
And the strategic breakdown here is so thorough. Koo immediately makes his nominations. Latrice, who is the older lady of the house, Lyric, and Mallory, who is apparently a rocket scientist, but has a complete meltdown every single time things don't go her way.
Which makes for great television.
Oh, amazing television. But the real gold isn't even on the main broadcast. It's on the live feeds.
The live feeds are where it's at.
Right. The host spends his precious free time tracking a literal tea party on the live feeds where Drew, the chicken boy, and Barrett get all gussied up in dresses.
It is a relentless, glorious consumption of manufactured drama.
It really is.
It's basically a safe space to watch other people's routines fall apart so he doesn't have to worry about his own.
Oh, that's deep. And speaking of routines, since we are tracking the schedule so closely, we have to make sure you know Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights.
Definitely. Mark your calendars right now. Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights. You cannot miss the tea parties.
You really can't. But what's interesting to me is that the escapism in this universe isn't just televised. It's crowdsourced from the listeners' lives, too.
Oh, like the travel reports.
Yeah. We hear from a listener named Shy Yeti, who calls in to detail his three recent, very lavish holidays.
Oh, Shy Yeti's living large.
He is. He talks about taking this majestic cruise to the fjords in Norway and spending time having these idyllic Sunday lunches in country pubs down in Kent.
It sounds like a literal travel brochure.
Doesn't it? But then you contrast Shy Yeti's majestic Norwegian cruise with the gritty, glitchy reality of Miss Bacon's week.
Oh, poor Miss Bacon.
Right. She calls in to report that she got entirely locked out of her own house and her locked garage simply because she was trying to turn off a stubborn light.
She ends up totally stranded on her own property.
Stranded!
and she's forced to calculate the real-time cost of calling a locksmith versus relying on a GMC membership.
The panic math.
Hmm. And ultimately, she has to swallow her pride and drive a pickup truck belonging to someone she refers to as the African just to resolve the situation and get back inside.
It's just the perfect juxtaposition of the modern experience.
It really is.
One listener is effortlessly cruising the fjords of Norway, and the other is trapped in her own driveway, fighting a garage door just to turn off a light bulb.
It's the duality of man.
Exactly. But, you know, the host doesn't just rely on TV and callers for escape. He has his own wild physical excursion plan for the end of the week.
Oh, absolutely. And it is a complete pivot.
It's huge.
He entirely abandons his normal, highly regimented routine. He actually skips his usual Thursday senior size class, which is usually a non-negotiable anchor in his week.
You do not skip senior size.
But he skips it to pack his bags and head down to the Metropolis Entertainment Complex.
Otherwise known affectionately to the community as the Horror Hotel.
The Horror Hotel.
And he is heading there for a very specific, highly anticipated event, the Naked Cement Pond Party.
Which is hosted this year by Atticus Koopa.
Atticus Koopa?
Yeah, who the host notes is taking over the Master of Ceremonies role.
Mm-hmm.
And the roster of performers for this event is just fantastic.
Who's on the lineup?
Well, you have Teddy Graham, Alex Koff, and Pup Bandit all making appearances.
Wow. And the host actually notes on the audio logs with his signature dry observation that given the lineup, it is going to be a whole lot of Harry.
It's just a complete and utter departure from the rigidity of the Frugal Fortress.
It really is. Let's just look at that juxtaposition for a second, right?
Yeah, I'll lay it out.
You have a man who meticulously wakes up at 5 a.m.
Check.
He eats a precise brioche muffin.
Check.
Strictly enforces a 15-ring limit on his phone.
Sure.
And prints his grocery list on photo paper. And then he suddenly ditches his senior size class to go to a Naked Cement Pond Party at the Horror Hotel.
It's wild.
It's incredible. It's the psychological equivalent of wearing a perfectly tailored, very conservative, gray, three-piece suit to the office. But when you open the jacket, the inside lining is just screaming neon leopard print.
I love that image so much.
Yeah.
Because that is the true magic of this universe.
It is.
The tailored suit, the rigid routine, the 15 rings, the careful clipping of Vaughn's East coupons, the meticulous tracking of birthdays. That structure is what makes the neon leopard print lining possible.
That's a great point.
Think about it. If his daily life wasn't so aggressively secure, the sheer chaos of the cement pond party or the emotional roller coaster of the Big Brother live feeds would just be overwhelming.
It would be too much.
The routine doesn't trap him. The routine actually earns him the right to escape.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to chew on as you go about your day.
What's the takeaway here?
Well, we spend so much time and money in modern life trying to automate absolutely everything, mostly to avoid mistakes.
Oh, completely.
We want smart homes that turn the lights on for us. AI schedules that book our meetings, auto renewal, so we never have to think about a bill.
We just want it all to be seamless.
We are desperate for a frictionless existence.
Yeah.
But looking at this community, what if the friction is the point?
Oh, I like that.
Think about the grocery shopping list accidentally printed on glossy photo paper, the stubborn 15-ring answering machines, the locked garage doors, the crooked handles on the mugs. What if that friction is the only thing actually keeping us actively engaged in our own existence?
Right. Without it, you're just drifting.
Exactly. Without those glitches forcing us to react, we aren't really living. We're just sleepwalking through the convenience.
The glitches demand our attention.
They really do.
They shake us out of autopilot. They prove we are still here, figuring it out, surviving the tide, one crooked handle at a time.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's analysis. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
We invite you right back here for next Sunday's show to continue unpacking the brilliant, messy reality of the archives. See you then.
We'll see you next Sunday here on Ruination Repeat. Thank you for calling.